Tyson Friday. Giancarlo, welcome to Nonstop Rock Talk. Man, it's great to have you on the show today. So, how are you making out through this whole pandemic situation?
I'm doing good, man. Just, you know, going to the supermarkets. We got our mask here and staying away from people, which I like anyways.
Sometimes that's nice.
No, it's going good here in California. We're doing a better job than I thought. So, but people are starting to go outside a lot more now and stuff like that. It's right. And some of the businesses are starting to open up slowly but surely. So yeah, it's going good.
That's good. Today's actually the first day up here in Toronto that it's actually warm. So I was out a little while ago. I had to go to the store and everybody's out, which they're probably not supposed to be, but there's more people out today. And it's Saturday too, but It's finally we're starting to get nice weather. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Well, hopefully things are going to turn around for the best. I mean, I follow what was going on in Italy, and I'm kind of trying to follow that timeline. Alex, my guitarist, has been, I think they're loosening things up now. So they're kind of a couple months ahead of us. So,
yeah, I'm just
trying to follow that timeline.
I talked to David Reese last week. He lives in Italy. And he he said that he's still in the house and he was looking at another couple weeks until he said he was going stir crazy, right? But
I believe it.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine here we have the beach down the street.
Yeah, that would, I mean, and it being sunny all the time for the most part, kind
of like, yeah, it's hard, man. It's hard not being able to go to the place you're used to going, but you know, it's like another sense of appreciation for what we have now. You know, didn't think about that before.
Yeah.
The little in life mean a lot more now. So
that's so true. So now with all that said, last year marked another release from your band Faith Says entitled Bleed for Passion. You and I kind of spoke in a written interview about back in July for Sleaze Rocks. And I can't remember if the album had been released or was just about to be released. Regardless, since that time, kind of what have you been up to? And I'm sure you've been promoting the album.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we just kept it rolling. Right now, I'm just taking a break. I'm taking it easy with my family and stuff like that. This coronavirus thing has kind of changed everything for everybody. Mm-hmm. There was a few talks of a few things. One with my label and Scarlet, there were some things that we were discussing, like a super group type thing. But everything's like on hold. I'm not really writing. Maybe I'll get back into it or think about it. But we'll see. Right now, I'm just kind of taking it easy. I was happy with the result of the last album, like in terms of how much press we got. It was our most successful, the most listens. It was awesome. It was definitely my favorite era of everything. Everybody was interviewing me left and right. We were everywhere. It was pretty cool, man. I'm really proud of it. It was probably my defining album and moment for me, especially with everything in the music business, how bad it was that I was able to succeed, you know, and be everywhere. Everybody picked up the first song.
Yeah.
You know, Dee Snider picked it up for his thing, Blabbermouth, Eddie Trunk. I mean, everybody, it was great. It was everything I had envisioned in my head and it just blew up. For good or bad, I mean, some people freaked out on the song. They were like, what? But end of the day, it really went well.
You always get those people like, what are they doing? Why?
They don't understand. I think it was the lyrics. I think the lyrics on Angelic were like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not used to hearing lyrics like that. They're used to hearing, you know, I don't even know.
Well, that's
they're used to hearing thrash.
Yeah, so that's true.
A little bit more, and I think it hit a sore spot with a lot of people on those heavy metal sites. Because the second song was dark and evil. Nobody hated on it.
Yeah, well, exactly. I don't know.
Angelic had a lot more to say. Maybe I love them both, but I mean, it really struck a note. Actually, you know, at NAMM, Pete Fry came up to me, and we're good buddies. He's like, man, that first song, man, I don't know what happened to people. I'm like, I know they really lost their shit. It's a good song, and it's positive. And I think the lyrics mess with people's head a little, you know, like it's the song's about change. And I don't want to change. I like, you know, sitting in my own crap and being lazy sometimes. Right. But the song is about trying to do better. And I think a lot of people were like, oh, freaking out over it, I guess.
Well, I mean,
if it's weird. That song got weird reception, man.
Really? I mean, if they're not talking about you, though, you're not doing something right then. I mean, sometimes they say that, right?
I mean, you've heard it. It's a great prog metal song.
Yeah, it's amazing.
The context and the title, it really evokes something that people, it bothered them. It was weird. I've never got a reception from a song like that. That's but it's funny. Like up to like 175K views and stuff. I mean, it did that's really awesome. Well.
That's really amazing. It's so funny that we say that too. It's up to 175K views. And it's like, remember back in the day, it's like, you know, it's such a different way of talking about music now, which it has been for a long time, for quite a long time now. But it's just, it's funny when you say 175K on YouTube and where it used to be, well, it's, you know, it's sold 500,000 copies or something like that.
Right. Yeah, so that's kind of what we're following to see if people are listening or not. I mean, like we go, oh, okay, between that and the other video, we're up to like 250,000 views. That's how we look at it. It's like, wow, 250,000 people checked out the new song.
Yeah.
That's freaking amazing. It is. So, you know, but the first one took off harder. The second one did better in like Italy. Like all the Italian press loved the second one. So.
Oh, that's cool. That's real cool.
I love them both.
So, I mean,
they're one's dark, one's light.
Yeah. I mean, talking about that song, and this is kind of a question I've never actually asked an artist, but tell me about yourself as a songwriter, objectively, when putting across your thoughts to a song, what do you think your biggest strength is? And where do you feel that in terms of songwriting, do you really shine?
Oof. That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think I shine with being honest. With lyrics, it came from my heart. It's not like my music, all it really is the sounds that I grew up listening to. I wouldn't say, and I think I've said this before, I wouldn't say my music is most original in terms of the riffs and the progression. It's got an up-to-date feel, but it has that. I mean, I worked with the guys from Rat and this and that. So you're going to kind of automatically hear some of that in what I do. It's just what I grew up around. So it's, I would say my lyrics, though, have more of a statement. And I think my voice is pretty trademarked, too.
Yeah.
So I'd say my songwriting and my vocal is my main strength.
Yeah.
It's like when I sing, I don't sound like anybody else. I sound like me. Whether if you like it or you don't, it's like, oh, it's Giancarlo. I don't try to be somebody else as a singer or when I'm writing my lyrics. I want my kids to look back, wow, well, my dad was going through that 20 years ago. Wow, that's pretty interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And the reason I asked that was because from knowing your songs, from your songwriting, I find like it can be very intense and it can be emotional. And I kind of wanted to get it from your view of what you thought. So the answer that you gave was kind of like what I thought you would have said. So that's perfect.
Yeah, I'm an emotional guy. No, I that's a good description of me. I know certain people that say that about me. You're so intense. You're so intense. Somebody I live with.
Well, I don't mean personality wise. I think sometimes the lyrics, though, I mean, and how you're conveying it in the song, and that's what makes great music is that you're emotionally attached to what you're putting out.
Right. It's real to me. It's not. I mean, I don't want to look back and be like, I wrote this stupid song about me cruising down Sunset Boulevard. And
yeah.
I don't care. I mean, I've been to Sunset Boulevard. It's fine, but it doesn't connect with my heart. I wanted, you know, I grew up listening to Kiss, and I love Kiss. I love the non-makeup era. But it was when I heard Operation Mindcrime when I went, I want to take my songwriting to, I want to be like a rock entertainment and all that. But I also want to be a better songwriter. So, you know, it's, I love my hair metal. I love the excitement. I love the intensity of the, of Kiss and Motley and rap and war. No, but there's that other side to me that loves progressive music and is trying to strive to be a better musician.
Yeah.
There's so many different elements to what I do. I'm into Motown. I'm into freaking 80s pop. So you take all these things and you throw them together and you get what I am. I'm not just sticking with one type of thing.
I'm kind of the same. I love my 80s hair rock, but you speaking of Operation Mindcrime, when that came out and those, that lyrical content, it was just like, okay, I in some way am evolving because I've listened to this. And that put me towards like starting to listen to like Megadeth on like Rust in Peace, and then focusing on Dave Mustaine's lyric content, because some of his lyrics were, you're just like, holy man, this guy's smart. Like, it's just, you wanted to be a more intelligent listener. It's like, okay, yeah, I can listen to Poison and Talk Dirty to Me and Nothing But a Good Time. But when I feel like it, I also want to be a little bit more serious.
Right. I'm trying to write songs where, like, the first time I heard Bridge by Queensryche, the first time I heard I Don't Believe in Love off Mindcrime, it did something to me. Or I'm into X Japan a lot. I can't even understand the lyrics, man, on a lot of songs. Once again, we'll bring her up again. She's like, wait, you can't even understand. She's going to hate on me after this. You can't even understand what he's saying. I'm like, you have to feel the music. Man, I'm going to get so much heat after this interview. there's like a sense of emotion when you listen to X Japan's music, the vocal, the piano, the symphony. I can't fully understand what he's singing in Japanese, but there's something inside my heart that it really connects with that. So, I mean, I want to connect with music when I'm writing. I just don't want to throw it out there because I want to freaking fit in with all the other bands. I mean, we're on melodic rock and all, I don't know if I want to say that site, but you know, we're on a lot of those AOR type stuff, and people are like, Gian's so aggressive. He's so aggressive when he sings. I don't care. That's who I am. You know, when Ultimate Warrior went to the ring and shook the ropes and went freaking crazy, people were like, what the heck is going on with this guy? I think you need to be more unique.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I view music.
Yeah. I think if you are unique, you stand out more. You're not just in the general population of what else is out there being generic. I mean, it's kind of good to stand out. And
I don't want everybody to like me.
That's okay too. That's okay.
If everybody
too.
Likes you, you got a problem.
Yeah, that's so true. That is, you're absolutely right. I mean, and going back to listening to, it was X Japan, right?
Yeah. Since I was 12.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, sometimes you can listen to music and the melody just captures you. It's not really what the words, what, you know, like, it's how they're singing it and how that melody goes. And maybe it's in another language, but sometimes a melody just captures you, right?
That's right. Tyson, I love you more and more every day, bro. Did you hear that?
Thanks, man.
Did you hear that? That is truth right there. Well, look at Japan. They love hair metal.
That's right.
They know what freaking we're singing about. Some of them do, because it's in Italy too. I mean, you know, but I do a lot of lyric arrangement for people like in Italy, like my guitarist, they'll send me stuff. Or I did a Pushkin album from Russia. I was a lyrical assistant to get all the lyrics straight. You know, not everybody fully understands what they're singing about.
No.
They don't.
No, and it's so true. I mean, when you think of dance music, for instance,
right?
It's that, or disco, it's that beat. The people really aren't, you know, they want to hear something catchy, and it could be cheesy and catchy, and they don't care. It's how it makes them feel, how it makes them want to dance. I'm not a fan. I'm not a big dance music fan, you know, or disco, but I understand why it gets people excited.
Right.
You know.
Music's awesome. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and that's just it. Like, take a song like Pour Some Sugar on Me, for instance. Pour Some Sugar on Me? Like, really?
It's not literally about taking sugar packets.
Yeah.
In my cover band, I used to just take the sugar packet, open it, and like launch it on myself and sing the song. That's what it's about.
But I mean, it gets people excited. They love that song, right?
Right. It's catchy and it's up tempo and it's a good group.
Yeah, exactly.
Like James Brown, I was watching the documentary on him once where he was like, oh, that doesn't make sense. So like, it doesn't make sense. And he goes, does it feel good? Yeah. Does it like, you know, does it feel right? They're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't make, doesn't have to make sense to everybody. Did it feel good to you? Well, that's what music's all about. That was really cool when I saw that. I'm like, wow, I can relate to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't have to be, everything doesn't have to be precise. I saw something on a website where somebody's like, oh, Gion hit a note and it sounded flat and oh, it should be better. Well, you know what? Listen to the old Temptations when David Ruffin, and people, who's David Ruffin? Well, go listen to the Temptations. When he's singing Ain't Too Proud to Beg, when he's like, I know you won't leave me, but I refuse to let you go. It's like, he's reaching for that note. It's nasty, it's dirty, and it's like, it's passionate. I don't care about being polished in perfection. You know, I like hearing the singer reaching for that note. If it sounds, or like, there's a James Brown song that I heard once. It was it's actually Sex Machine by James Brown. Get on up, get on up. If you listen close, the bass player's kick drum, it, you can hear the squeaking in the.
That's cool.
You can actually hear that they didn't, the kick pedal, it's going squeak, squeak, squeak. I guess when they recorded it, I don't know, maybe the kick pedal wasn't off, but if you listen closely, I heard that once. I'm like, wow, that's cool that they kept that in there. I'm into stuff like that. I'm into the imperfections in music. I think it makes it more real. Too. I don't want to be perfect.
I like it when you hear those little, like, you're like, what was that? You hear it in the music, you know, and you're like, rewind that. I got to hear that. What the hell was that? You know,
that's what music's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about, like, discovering new things, trying to expand yourself, trying to expand your songwriting, your vocal, your guitar playing, your drumming. Never saying, I'm at my peak, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Or it's like, what's that Def Leppard song, Bring It On the Heartbreak, I think I don't know if it was the original one or the remix. There's a bunch of talking at the end of the song, and it's really bizarre, and I have no idea what they're saying, but it always sounded cool to me. It's just that's just an example, but that kind of stuff always, I'm like, I kind of want to know, right? It's like putting that.
Especially back then, the production took a lot of time.
Yeah.
It's not as quick as it was now, so it's even more impressive.
Yeah.
We're back to Temptations. I listen to some of the vocals, and you go, wow, some of this stuff was done in one take.
It's crazy.
Wow.
It's crazy, man. Crazy.
Yeah, good stuff.
And I mean, and it's all on analog, and it was on tape. And
it's the real deal, man. You had to bring it back then.
Yeah. Yeah. And the producer or the engineer cutting tape, and just like, unbelievable.
Right. You know? Now you don't know what you're getting is real.
No, you don't. You don't, because it's so easy. It's so easy to fix stuff.
Well, on this album, I was at the studio in Costa Mesa, and there's this thing where, I don't know what it's called, but it keeps your voice in tune, like from a producer standpoint. So say the key is A, you could set it to A. Mm. I mean, that's how far ridiculousness we've gone with pitch shifting.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, it's an A. Okay. They had it on. I'm like, you have to turn it off. I can't even listen to myself because my voice moves around like a wave.
Yeah.
My voice doesn't like pitch shifters. It automatically is going like, what is going on? Because I don't stay in the pocket. I like to move around like an old Motown.
Yeah.
So some of this technology is ridiculous. You walk in a guitar center, they got shelves of pitch shifter. Yeah. If you need all them pitch shifters, either retake it, do it right, or you shouldn't be singing. That's
coming. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
like, pack bags.
Imagine Neil Young with a pitch shifter. Like Neil Young is not the great, like, he's not the most proficient singer in the world, but he's got a style, and you know what I mean? Like, there's lots of guys like that.
I like that stuff. I like stuff that ain't perfect, man.
Yeah, me too. Vince Neil. Like, the first Too Fast for Love. Like, he's not, you know, it's raw. Yep. It's just,
I like that stuff.
Yeah, me too. So let's talk about Tim Gaines a little bit. I mean, we've discussed him leaving Stryper in the past. So
everybody likes to talk about.
So I don't want to talk about that though. Let's put that to bed. That's done and over with. But
no, it's all right. We did the interview.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, in terms of Tim's input into the band, what does Tim kind of bring to the table?
I mean, not only being a positive, loving, wonderful person, he just always believed in me. My life, I met him 20 years ago. I was a 20-year-old kid, and he would come see me. I had a band here locally, and we were doing well. We had a showcase for Sony Music. We had opened up for King's X, Rat, Slaughter. I did all these different shows locally, and we were taking off, and that Sony thing came through, and Tim would come see me. And I thought at the time, I was friends with him and his wife at the time, and it really, as a person, changed my life, because I didn't know much about spiritual stuff other than what I grew up with, which was a disaster. And Tim as a person mainly has always been an upbeat, nice and loving person to me. So him working with me alone is great, especially with Fabrizio being out of the producing seat and bass player seat, because Fabrizio and I love him to death to this day. Yeah. So to replace Fabrizio was like a brother to me. You know, Tim was a perfect replacement. And musically, I mean, he clicks with Matt Starr so well. He understands songwriting. We wrote a song called Through the Scars together. I went to Arizona. We sat there and started working it. I came home and reworked it. I don't know, man. I've never even gotten a fight with a guy. So when I hear there's problems with him, it's like, dude, I don't understand. I don't.
Yeah.
Him and I have never been in one fight.
He just seems, I mean, I met him once. It was brief, but I'm just like, he just seems like such a nice guy. So I don't
know. He is. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. So it's, you know, politics within that band. Unfortunately, you know, we did the interview together when he did leave Striper. It caused a lot of chaos in my life. You know, people were emailing me. Oh, blah, blah, blah. It's like, dude, I'm not Michael Sweet. You're not going to like my answer.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because I'm more brutal. You know, people think Faith's Edge and think he's going to be this nice, sweet guy. And it's like some of my answers to people when they email, I'm not doing this circus anymore. And it's unfortunate. Maybe they'll work it out one day. Yeah. I hope they do. And that would be great just for their sake. But there's other things that, you know, it comes down to any relationship, trying to get along and talk it out. So hopefully they will. I mean,
it's always been kind of a weird dynamic. What's up?
Just as bros. Just as bros, man.
Yeah.
It's not like join the band, but whatever him and Michael have under the bridge, it'd be nice for them to work out one day.
Yeah. It's such a, I mean, he was out of the band briefly in the 80s and then came back too. So it's kind of been a weird situation right from all the way back to then.
Right.
I mean, I can't comment.
I know some additional stuff that I don't talk about, and I won't, because it's not my place to say it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But when it comes down to it, like I said, I think the interview we had done, I said, like, dude, that's your brother for over 30 years. Let's try to, if you can work it out. And Tim is quiet, man. So expecting Tim to, some people I saw responding to some of my things, well, Tim should reach out to Michael. Dude, you know how Tim is. He's quiet. He kind of, go out of your way, be nice to him, hit him up. Tim's just look at him on stage and very quiet, very reserved. It's not very Tim's personality type to be the aggressor and like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, and Michael's more like me. He's a front man. He's a guy who talks more. Yeah. I just feel like it would need to be his responsibility. And some people might disagree with me, but that's how I've always viewed it.
Oh, that's cool. So, I mean, we're going to change gears a little bit from that, and I think we've kind of put that one to bed on any of that situation. Yeah, exactly. I want to talk about your influences a bit. I mean, we've kind of touched on it a bit. I mean, growing up, what really drove you to want to become a musician, and like what bands you were listening to and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I was an 80s kid. It was awesome. Every day I got to come home after school. I got to watch MTV at the pinnacle. Yeah. So you had anything from George Michael, Richard Marx, Striper, Kiss, to Headbangers Ball with Megadeth and Anthrax and all these. I mean, I would just come home and sit there and watch George Michael, Faith album.
Yeah.
You know, strange enough, you know, oh my God, there's ducks flying behind me. Anyways, that was strange.
Huh.
So I was fortunate to grow up in one of the greatest eras for music. Then I can go down the street, go to the music stores. In my neighborhood, I grew up in Torrance, California. There was like 6 music stores.
Wow.
Where I can just take my skateboard and go within a few miles. I have the mall right by me. So I was so far, I could go to the warehouse, Sam Goody, Music Plus. They had a place called Second Time Around. They had all these places. So if I heard something on MTV, I can run to the store and then buy the CD and look at the lyrics. Or they had records still. You know, so I was fortunate enough to catch it. And then Nirvana came and my life sucked forever. After 1992, man, something just happened.
Something went weird. It's like the stars.
I hated grunge, man. Like all of a sudden I had to pretend that I didn't want to play guitar. As I was starting to learn around 92.
You weren't?
And I was heavily into Kiss, yeah. Revenge,
yeah.
Winger and the Heart of the Young, you know, stuff like that. So yeah. I was like metal. And I was into Megadeth and stuff. So when grunge came in, it was like all of a sudden you didn't want to be a rock star anymore. Everybody was depressed.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted a guitar solo anymore. And I had to go to school with these kids in high school that didn't want to play hair metal type stuff, even though it was more hard to play. It was like, well, listen, I used to have to work out deals with people. Like, okay, I'll learn a Nirvana song if you learn a Kiss song. Or I'll learn a whatever. I don't even remember those bands.
Did they come back and go, dude, I can't play that. like those grunge guys, right?
Yeah.
Like
Nirvana was great for what it was. I like their originality. And I also like, you know what I do like about grunge? They wiped out some of the stuff. It was going too far. I remember, I don't rip on like other bands, but it's like there was all these new signings. They were just signing them because they had a look.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and I see some labels doing re-signing those bands now to their labels in Europe. It's like, dude, these bands killed the scene. Why are you re-signing them? They destroyed everything. So it was going too far. So Nirvana was good in a way because it kind of cleared out the cheesiness of what hair metal was becoming. As a kid, I saw it go down. Yeah. I was a kid. I was like 12 years old. It was good. It was good. And then it got so generic and corny. They were signing this one, that one, this one, that one. I was like, dude, this is horrible.
Yeah.
So Nirvana in a way was a cool way of kind of clearing it out. But then the problem was the business never fully recovered because nobody wanted to be a rock star after that.
No, exactly. And that's so true. It's funny because and I've had so many conversations on my show about this, about the grunge era and Nirvana and all that. And it's funny to hear different opinions on it. For me, it was kind of like I would start hunting down, you know, like say for instance, Warrant was still around. Janie left for a while and then he came back. But they were on a smaller label like CMC International and Slaughter went to that label. But those were hard to find, like, for me. I'd have to go to Toronto to the HMV store and hunt them down in the import section, right? Wow. And then, so I was still listening to that stuff, like, you know, I'd hunt down Dawkins still and Widowmaker, whatever, you know, whatever was coming out that Metal Edge was still supporting that no one was listening to. But then I was listening to Megadeth, Corrosion of Conformity, more Queensryche, White Zombie, all that kind of stuff. So I wasn't getting into the grunge thing. I just didn't. It wasn't me, right? So there was still an avenue to listen to music. It was just harder.
Right.
For the stuff.
Well, I was listening to the Karabi album in 94.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We were listening to that, too.
I don't know why people say it's a grunge record. To me, it's a dark metal record.
Oh,
it's a fantastic record. The production's huge.
I think it's just I think it's a great, hard rock album, metal album. I don't know.
Evil. I listened to that a lot in high school. Cinderella's Still Climbing. I listened to that a lot. Queensryche, Promised Land.
Yeah,
Promised Land. There's a lot of good albums coming out. It just wasn't getting as much push, you know? It was a different time, man. It was like people are too trendy and they're like sheeple, meh.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I was listening to Sabotage, Handful of Rain at that time. And Alex Skolnick played on that album, and I loved it. It was phenomenal because it was a little bit operatic at times as well. It was kind of like Queen, like kind of these Queen parts, but heavy metal. So I was really into that. I was listening to that, and a band called The Organization that was the guys from Death Angel, and they started this other band, and I was listening to that. I was just kind of hunting down. It was like trying to broaden but stay within the realm of good music, right?
And you really had a look back then.
What's that?
You really had a hunt back then. It was weird. Yeah. I went through that shift around 94, 95.
Yeah.
Where I'd be, oh, man, that's cool. Wow. Oh, man, I can get this album here.
Yeah.
I would go to Blockbuster Music. I don't know if they had that where you're at, but they had listening stations. And I would like, oh, is this any good? Is that any good? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, I mean.
The last band that got a piece of it, I remember, was Jackal.
Yes.
Remember Jackal?
Oh, yeah.
They got there, I think they're the last hair metal type band that actually got a piece of the pie in 94.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they do that. Nobody.
Yeah, they. I mean, they did. I mean, their first album did decent. The second one, which was Push Comes to Shove, comes out, and that still was getting radio play. And then the third one, which was Cut the Crap, Brian Johnson sang on one of the songs with them, and I think that gave. But they went to Sony, and I think that gave them a little bit more momentum as well.
Right. Yeah, they're the last band that I remember that got a piece of the pie. I saw my first concert actually was. Them opening up for Aerosmith at the LA Forum in 1994. I was 14 years old. It was my first concert. They were great.
Man. I saw that tour in Toronto with Jackal.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, Jackal and Aerosmith at the Sky Dome. Yep.
There you go. So see?
Yeah.
Got a connection.
Yeah, exactly. No, and that was a great show, man. Jackal was great. I mean, the Four Horsemen were kind of around then, or maybe they were a little bit before that, but they kind of died off, and they were kind of that same type of music, right?
I don't know. I'm not aware of who they are. No.
I mean, then there was other bands like that were that they kind of. It was weird too because they kind of tried to go like the southern style, like Brother Kane and Cry of Love were around then, as like in 92, 93, 94 around then. They were just. It was kind of weird. It was just in general. It was just a weird time, music.
It was
right.
It was. And I was a kid and I was moving, you know, I grew up in my neighborhood and all of a sudden I was having to move to another city, like about, you know, 45 minutes away from my hometown. So it was a weird period for me because like all of a sudden the music was changing and then I was having to move to a city, which I still can't stand, you know. It was a weird time in my life, you know, the whole grunge movement. So,
yeah,
it's very looking back on it.
And I mean, it didn't last as long as the 80s hair thing.
Like a couple years by 94, it was done.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like they just kind of self-destructed Hallelujah. Themselves. What's that?
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Yeah. Yeah, but then it never recovered. So, you know.
SG on what kind of music he doesn't like. There you go.
Oh, what kind of music don't you like?
anything after 1992. I'm joking. Unless it's from Europe or Japan. Because they kept it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
there's a lot of good bands, dude, in Sweden and stuff. Ooh, check that out.
Yeah.
We'll get into that another time.
Like it, during that time or now? What do you...
Now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, I know.
What is it? Heat and One Desire and all these bands? Woo, man, they're pretty good.
I'm familiar with all of them. I actually like Crazy Licks. I'm into that band.
Yeah, they're good, too.
They're a cool band.
Actually, Jimmy from One Desire, the guitarist, he was possibly going to produce. I was so impressed. This production on their first album, him and I talked about producing Bleed for Passion. I was like right on the verge of doing it with him. And then Alex, my guitar player, ended up doing it. But we were talking about it actually.
Wow. Well, actually, you know what? My favorite band is from Switzerland called Gotthard. I love that band. And they've got a new album out and I'm really digging on that too. Really.
That's one of the good things about the internet. You can find out about music all around the world. So
yeah. It's cool. Yeah, and that's a positive, right? Because back in our day in the 90s, this was not possible, right?
Right, and now if I say, hey, go check out X Japan, or go check out Heat, or go check out Face Edge, boom, you can do it in a few minutes. It's great.
Yeah.
It helped me.
Yeah, exactly.
All our following stuff is in Japan and Europe. In the States, nobody knows who I am.
Yeah, that's crazy, you know?
I mean, I do a lot of interviews and stuff like that, and our products on Walmart and all this stuff, but I tell everybody, well... You know, like when I did the stuff with Tower Records in Japan through Universal, it's like you walk in the store and people are sending me pictures with a display with a poster of me on it.
That's cool.
You know, they don't have anything like that here in America anymore. Tower Records is sayonara.
I mean,
but it was cool to see that in Japan. Or like Burn Magazine is my favorite magazine ever since I was a kid. And then on our, you know, album, they did a full bio on me in Burn. And it's on my CD. It's like pretty cool accomplishment. So.
That is awesome. Yeah, I watched. There's a documentary about Tower Records. I don't know if you saw it. and they...
I heard about it.
Yeah, and it's really cool. And they go to, I mean, near the end, they go to the Tower Records store in Japan. And
check that out.
There's one in Ireland, in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to that a couple years ago. I was like, oh, there's Tower Records. I got to go. Because we had one in Toronto, but it didn't last very long. That was like...
Right. That Speaking of Tower Records, I had a Tower Records where I grew up too, right down the street.
Yeah. It's iconic, really. For that time. You know, that's the iconic record store. In Canada, it was kind of... we had Tower, but Sam the Record Man was our big chain that was all across Canada. And that was kind of like our Tower Records. So
right.
That was cool. Now,
good old days.
Yeah. We could go on about that forever.
Yeah, we could.
Now, at one point, you worked at Juan Crochet's studio. Tell me a bit about that experience. I mean, I'm sure you learned a lot.
Yeah, I worked with Juan when I was 22, 23 at the Cellar. It's called the Cellar.
The Cellar. Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
And he did a 4-song EP. I saw it on eBay the other day for freaking $80 or something.
Wow.
The band I was in, you know, after I had a little falling out with that band and my marriage was starting to fall apart after that. Or right before that, I still went in the studio with Juan to still try again to maybe get a deal after the Sony thing didn't work out for me. I still tried on my own. I went in there and played all the parts, and Juan and I went in there and did a 4 or 5 song thing. Yeah, $80 on eBay. That's wow. Ridiculous.
That's pretty cool.
It's called Shattered. Shattered was the name of the band. It's called the Images of Life EP. So if you want to look it up, there you go.
Yeah.
And I only have a couple copies left because when I went through my divorce, I left boxes of those. See, I was just, I'm out of here. So they're floating around there and I saw one for $80. I'm like, well, that's nice.
Wow.
But so him and I did that EP together. So basically any background vocal that you hear was taught to me by Juan Crochet. He took me in the studio one night and he's like, look, you've got this crazy vocal range. I'm going to teach you how to harmonize vocals. So I'd be like, I don't know, man, I don't understand it. And he'd be like, no, you can do it. And he would teach me all these multiple harmonies.
Yeah.
And any background vocal you hear is because of Juan. Without Juan, I would have never learned how to do that. So thanks, Juan. And Juan taught me all my backgrounds. Like if you listen to on the new album, Bleeding with the Memories, all these work even back from this, that's all from what Juan taught me. So in every face that song, I do all those multiple vocals. That's because of what he showed me. So that was a main thing I took from working with Juan was my background vocals. I mean, I'll never forget the stuff he showed me.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, his vocals on the Rat albums were,
listen to Nobody Rides for Free. All those backgrounds.
Yeah.
It's similar. Listen to my background and listen to Nobody. 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 You know, how it's all layered.
Yeah.
That's all Juan's voice. So it's a similar type background, Nobody Writes for Free, to what I do because, he taught me. So it's kind of a cool little tidbit about my history.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And to learn from someone like him, too.
Your heroes and teach you that. I mean, I remember going into my high school listening to Detonator and then standing in there in the studio with him at his house teaching me how to layer background vocals. It was a pretty cool accomplishment.
That is cool. That's very cool. Now, I kind of want to have a little bit of fun with your influence thing.
Sure.
I mean, on Facebook, you're on Facebook, so you see these things where people are posting post your top 10 albums. Well, I don't want to do 10 albums, but I'm just kind of curious, if you had to name your top 5 albums, what they might be.
Okay. Number one.
Yeah.
Number one of all time, without a doubt. X Japan Art of Life.
Cool.
If you haven't heard it, we'll be friends again once you do hear it.
Okay.
Art of Life is a 30-minute epic freaking concept album by them that came out in 1992. It's all English, even though it doesn't sound like it. It's all in English. Just, I don't know, that album changed everything about my songwriting. I met Yoshiki once at a restaurant in 98. I was 18, and nobody knew who X Japan was here at the time. And I sat at a table. We had dinner. He's like, how do you know me? I'm like, dude, I'm a huge fan. He's like, what? Because nobody knew him in America.
Yeah.
And actually at the time, Yoshiki was such a nice guy. He gave me, he had a label called Ecstasy Records. And he gave me some contacts over there to reach out to them and some management people. And they were going to come see my old band Shattered that I was talking about.
Yeah.
And but I kind of moved away. So I fell out of touch with those people. I don't know where they are now. The label closed. But after one dinner, just him giving me those contacts at his label to help me out was really cool. I wish I'd run into him again one day, but
that's happened. Wow.
So that's my number one pick.
Number one. Wow.
Number two is going to be Mindcrime.
Cool.
First one, of course.
Yeah, the first. Yeah, let's not go into the second one.
Yeah. Some good ones on there. I like the Hands and stuff. Just different time.
Yeah.
No DeGarmo, no Reich.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Agree.
Three, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and go Winger Pole.
Cool.
Yeah. Fantastic production.
Yeah.
Still holds up. Great record. Love it. 10 great songs. Well, one's kind of, but 10 great songs.
Yeah.
Like a ritual is questionable, but the drum outro makes up for it. Let's see. Doggy Dog,
yeah.
Jamie. I'm biased to liking Doggy Dog because Jamie being my friend
yeah.
at the time. Number five, ooh, George Michael Faith.
Wow.
I like Terrence Trent D'Arby's Introducing the Hardline. I like, geez, I like a lot of stuff, man. I mean, that's a top five, six.
That's pretty cool.
Temptations, like I have a 2-CD Temptations CD set. X Japan Dahlia. I mean, man, I can go on. But I mean, Art of Life is probably my favorite of all time.
No, that's cool, man. That's kind of why I wanted to ask, because I'm like, sometimes getting to know an artist a little bit more, hearing what the albums that they're listening to may make somebody else understand them a little bit more too.
Yeah, because nobody can pinpoint exactly who my main influence is. Nobody said, you sound just like that singer.
That's right. Yeah.
So I think a lot of people ask. They always ask me that. So.
Oh, that's cool. So now we did mention Warren. What did you think of Ultraphobic, by the way?
Loved it.
Me too.
The only thing I don't dig about it, man, is the down-tuned, grungy-sounding guitar.
Yeah.
Like, I wish they would have done it like in a Doggy Doll style of guitar playing,
mm-hmm.
like a instead of a gung 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 gung. You know, like I think the album would have been even better if the guitarist wouldn't have played it on purpose in that style. But other than that, I mean, I think it's really great record.
There's some really great songwriting on that album. Some really great songs.
Freaking killer.
Oh,
the vocal is great. I just don't like some of the guitars. It sounds forced. Kind of like Skid Row Subhuman Race.
Yes.
Where it's like, dude, we know you're pretending that you can't play right now.
Well, I mean, I really loved Ultraphobic and I didn't mind Belly to Belly, but it was more grunge sounding than Ultraphobic.
I can't do Belly to Belly other than Letter to a Friend. I just can't. I can't do it.
What was
it? It's too grunge for me.
It is. An Indian Giver. Yeah. It was. I don't listen to it now. I don't think I've listened to it since it came out.
I might have like a freaking aneurysm if I have any more grunge than that. Yeah, I do. I like grunge.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's too funny. So let's talk about Jane Lane a little bit. What kind of impact did he have on you just in general? Like, you knew him and you were friends with him and whatnot.
Yeah, I started hanging out with him when I was 18. He would it's when the scene was really bad. He would do solo shows here in Orange County and he would just invite me. You know, after meeting him, he would, you know, I'd go hang out with him or bros. I'd show up early to the shows. He called me a few times on the phone and was always just mentoring me and stuff like that. And he would just be a really good guy. I mean, outside of the usual rock star stuff that maybe I wouldn't agree with now, you know, as a kid, you know, other than that, his positive mentoring on me took effect. And the connection with him and I was just strange about, like, when he had died. And then we did the album cover for him for the Liberty and Justice song, his final song.
Mm-hmm.
And also me being the final song before he died on that Liberty and Justice song. It's got my song and his song back to back.
Wow.
Kind of eerie.
Yeah.
But I've always felt like maybe he's looking out for me a little bit still, mm-hmm. you know. So definitely miss him. And, outside of some of the stuff he was dealing with, he was always a great guy to me. So I miss him all the time. He it'd be great to go see him again. Like, hey, let's go to a show. And
yeah,
it's very entertaining, you know, and not having him around sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the music world lost somebody, just an incredible artist, and it was very unfortunate.
Yeah. Nobody appreciated him at the time.
No, and they should have.
Very strange. People treated him very poorly.
Yeah, and that's horrible. That's too bad. I mean,
like, he was so great. And I was thinking, man, all y'all were ripping him on your websites in half. He's an emotional guy, and people were just tearing into him left and right. It's hard.
Oh, people do that. They love to do that. They love to rip on people when they have something to rip. You know?
Yeah, I see it myself. I mean, like I said, the blabbermouth stuff. It's like, I was on there, and people were saying things about it. Like, that's really nice of you. That's really nice.
Yeah.
I mean, so, if you know, we are people too.
We are.
You know, like it if you put out your baby online for the whole world to see, and then people that can't even do what you can do go on there and rip you apart. It's the beauty of it. So, you know, but you have to, like Tim Gaines told me, you have to have real thick skin, and your nerves, you eventually become numb to it. That's where I am now. If I see a negative review, it doesn't affect me anymore the way it used to. First, it was hard. How could somebody write that about me? I was calling my record company. You know, this guy in Italy at Metal Hammer, he said this and that about me. I'm going to break his neck. Wow. You know, and the label's like, don't worry. That's just how he is. I'm like, no, it's not okay. Kids in Italy are reading this magazine and they're thinking this and that because they're just ripping into me. I'm like, dude. But now you get used to it and you just go, okay, whatever. You know,
I don't, for me, as someone that reviews albums, I don't necessarily like to, the way I look at it is I think you have to try and even say, maybe if you don't love it, you need to try and find a positive out of it as well, because sometimes you have to realize that that's somebody's art and their art may not be the same as how you feel about it.
Well, yeah, look at what I said about Nirvana. It's not my cup of tea. That's right. I respect it for what it was. And I try to even look at the positive. Like, it did clear out some of the stuff that digging happened to hair metal. I respect what Kurt Cobain did as an originator. He had his own sounding voice. He was good for whatever style. Same with country. I'm not into country, but there's people that I'm like, wow, these guys are really good at what they do. Exactly. Same with rap. There's some rappers are like, wow, this guy's amazing. So yeah, I agree. But I think a lot of the critics and stuff, they like reading these articles. They like getting the rise. They love the rise out of us, man. And I just hit the point where I'm numb. I'm after this album. It was our best reviewed album. I became numb by that point. I mean, Blabbermouth kind of took me over the edge. It gave us the most promotion, of course, because everybody sees it. But after seeing some of the stuff on me on there, I just became completely numb. Yeah. And the guy from a band called Motley Brew was telling me how to sing. I just kind of, threw in the towel with my expectations of what people were going to say of me online.
Yeah, oh, that's crazy. So, you know what? We did mention Matt Starr.
Yeah.
He is on the Black Swan album as well, is he not?
Yeah, he is. He is. We were actually going to go. We worked on, me and my fiance went to the Revolution Saints video. Guy at Scarlet Records is doing videos too for Frontiers.
Yeah.
So I'm in the video.
Oh, cool.
A few times for Talk to Me.
Yeah.
She's in there a little bit too, but you see her by the door. But
cool.
We were going to work on the Black Swan videos too. And it just didn't work out for me and her to head over there to work that day. This guy on my label, the guy who discovered me, his name's Enzo.
Yeah.
He's doing these videos, so maybe we'll have a chance. But we were going to work on it, and just I didn't have the time to go down there those few days. But yeah, Matt's on that too.
It's a great album. Really like it.
Yeah, it's good.
I was really, I mean, there was a, when it first came out, I was listening to it every day. I was just loving it. I've kind of, I got the vinyl of it, which was cool too. So, it's just kind of been, I'm going to pull it out again. You know how you listen to something and then you listen to it too much and you're like, I just got to give that a break for a little bit.
Right. Staying in your CD thing for weeks or whatever. That's good.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a gum.
Yeah. And that makes for a good album. So anyway, so moving forward, you did mention that you're.
Oh my God! Do you see that squirrel on the roof behind me? Can you see me right now?
Oh yeah.
To put this interview, but there's a squirrel going.
Yeah, it's right on the roof. That's hilarious. That's okay.
Crazy.
I can edit that. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal.
You can keep it there if you want.
Yeah, I could. You know what? I might put it in there because people go, oh, what?
It's a metal squirrel. You guys didn't see it. It had kiss makeup on.
So moving forward, you mentioned that you're not really writing right now. And there might be another project, like a supergroup kind of thing. Is that kind of what you're looking towards now then?
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking to somebody. I can't say it yet because it's not confirmed, but he's in an 80s band. He's like first singer. Him and I are text, you know, sent me a message the other day. I submitted some stuff and he's interested in working with me.
Cool.
So I don't want to confirm that. Actually, another thing I was talking about that would have been awesome but didn't work out. I don't know if Dean Castronova was just trying to get me excited, but Dean likes Face Edge, and he was talking about a super group with me, him, Tim Gaines, and Danny Spitz from Anthrax.
Cool.
That would be amazing. That would be. But nothing came of it.
Yeah.
He was talking about, because him and Danny Spitz were doing something, and he was texting me, you know, man, I love the Face Edge stuff, but nothing ever came of it. But then there's something else, maybe with my label in Italy. But because of coronavirus, I'm waiting. I'm just kind of hanging out, doing family stuff lately.
That's funny you mentioned Danny Spitz.
That would have been a killer.
Probably. That would have been awesome, man.
I know, man. Maybe Dean will, a bell will ring in his head and go, whoa, man, yeah, Giancarlo, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he was serious about it, too. Like me, he's like, me and Danny Spitz have this thing. And we need a singer. I'm like, dude,
cool, man.
What I'm doing, why don't me and Tim Gaines join? He's like, oh my God. But nothing really came of it other than talking about it. But what an album that would have been.
That would have been wicked. Yeah, there was a buddy of mine. I can't remember how long ago. He sends me this video and he goes, this is Dan Spitz's new band or whatever it was. It was a live video. And he goes, check out the drummer. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, anyways, the drummer was this guy I went to high school with, and he was just phenomenal. Like, I remember him playing drums in high school, but he was like this Canadian guy from a small town, like an hour from Toronto. And he's like, did you know he was playing with Dan Spitz? And I was like, no, I had no idea. It was just when you mentioned his name, that kind of rang a bell in my head. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. And I kind of wanted to mention it because
I would love to work with that project if the door would open.
Oh,
time will tell.
So cool,
if it doesn't,
man.
At least in my mind, it could have been a nice memory.
Yeah, no kidding.
At least the consideration by Dean Castronovo as a singer was worth it for him to say that to me and text me. You know, hey, man, I love this stuff. This would be awesome. Let's do it. You know, just to be up for consideration by somebody of that caliber of a vocalist was pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would be like 2 a.m, bing, my phone goes off. My chick's like, who's that? And it's Dean Castronovo.
Wow.
He had a tendency to text me at like, it'd be like, I don't know where he's living at the time. It was like 1 a.m. Bing.
Wow.
12:30.
Well, that's
strange hours.
That's funny you mentioned him. And I mean, I'm going to let you go in a second, but I just had this thought, like, I take it he's not going back to Journey, but those guys, they fired, the bass player and the drummer. So it makes you kind of wonder if he is going to be back in Journey.
You never know. I mean, I picked him up for the video shoot. That's why in the beginning of Talk to Me, as soon as it starts, it shows him and I walking out of the elevator.
Cool.
Because we were joking around. Check it out if you haven't talked. It's called Talk to Me.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's on Frontiers.
That's the Revolution Saints.
Yeah, Revolution Saints. It just came out a few months
ago. Yeah, I know. It's in my, that album's actually in my Amazon cart. I want to buy it. So
check it out. Pretty good.
Yeah, I will.
But him and I were talking. We didn't really talk about Journey or anything like that, but we were just talking about life and stuff and his experience and what he had went through. And I remember seeing all over the news. So it was kind of weird meeting him later, and him and I just hit it off right away as buddies.
Yeah.
And I shoot him a text every once in a while. And it's like him and I just kind of hit it off. So it was a nice day when
That's
we went
cool.
up there. But you never know. I hope he's doing good. You know, he's battling. And I told him, I'm like, dude, like, you're so talented. Like, dude, you're just, look how many people you could help.
Yeah.
I'm like,
good point.
Just try not to let this stuff get the best of you. You know, it's hard.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, there's a new Dead Daisy song, I believe, is out now, too, and Revolution Saints. And he's busy, man.
Right. It's good to see him up and rolling. because for a while I knew what was going to happen with his life. Yeah. So to see him up and good is great.
Yeah, that's amazing. Anyways, is there anything else you want to say before we say goodbye?
No, man. Thanks for like supporting us, you know, and stuff like that. Yeah. And Sleaze Rocks too. I mean, it was like they started, you know, promoting me right away in the first album. They gave me a really good review on the first record when it came out. And that was in 2011, man.
That's crazy, man.
So it's kind of cool. And it's just nice to meet people from all over the world that I've connected with that have heard the albums and want to talk to me still.
Yeah.
Or whatever, especially when I'm not doing anything right now. I did one last week. I got another one.
Oh, that's wicked, man.
It's cool that people still, it's like, it's nice to know that people still want to hear what I'm doing.
Hmm.
And I'm totally taking a break. My life is not music business at all right now.
Yeah.
So it's nice when people still want to talk to me. And we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll change in the next year.
Yeah.
You know, right? My family stuff is my priority and being a normal human being instead of being a crazy, insane rock idiot. It's my priority. I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
You know, acting like a moron all the time. So I'm just trying to take it easy. And then when the music comes properly, it'll be the right thing for me and my family life. Yeah. So hopefully that'll be soon though, because I really want to write.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
So thanks for everything, dude. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. Anytime. And hopefully down the road, I'll have you on again and we'll talk some more. Because, I mean,
yes.
You know.
And I hope the show does great, man.
Thanks, man. Thank you very much. We're rolling along good and I'm happy with it. So I couldn't ask for more than this. So I'm totally happy with it.
Awesome, man. So yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And I'll be in touch with you, sir. I'm sure. And we always do keep in touch. So you have enjoy the rest of your day and hopefully we're out of isolation soon.
Man, I'm crazy. I got squirrels behind me. I got dog barking. I got
no.
Cool, man. Thanks again, brother.
Okay, brother. We'll talk to you soon, man. Take care.